This is Jenny Allen, and you are listening to the Made for This podcast. Well, we get to visit with a friend of the podcast. She has been on multiple times and been such a big hit, Dr. Allison Cook. It is so good to have you back. And you have a new book out, and I love the title, and I love the content. We are definitely kindred spirits here, and the book is called...
I Shouldn't Feel This Way.
Right, and it's the feeling everybody feels. We think we shouldn't feel this way, and I know that this is not what you're saying. You're saying we shouldn't feel this way about not feeling this way, right?
Yeah, we landed on that as the title because the reality is that is so often the first feeling that we have to name.
That's right.
That we have to recognize and go, the fact that I feel like I shouldn't feel this way is a clue that I probably need to slow down and figure out what I'm actually feeling. It's sort of the preceding emotion to all of the emotions. And yeah, I saw it so much in your book too. We are definitely on the same page with this.
Well, and I think it's timely because I think we all have had more emotions than we've ever had since COVID and or the lack thereof from feeling scared and all of those things that we didn't want to feel. That message is just so good to hear it in a million different ways and from a million different perspectives. Let's talk about specifically one of the main things that you write about and that we've heard from people that is really a stuck place is how emotions impact relationships. You and I both are of the mentality that emotions are gifts and they are good gifts from God and that they are useful and they have a purpose in our lives. And yet, there's also another reality where they've caused a lot of damage and it feels like it's hard to even believe that because there's been so much woundedness and hurt from our emotions. So why don't we start with just why did you include such a big portion in your book about relationships?
Yeah. And there's two different categories of it as I thought about emotions. One is I shouldn't feel trapped by toxicity. And this is that thing that I hear from folks when they're feeling all that complicated mix of I don't want to not trust this person, but I don't feel good about what's happening. And they try to sideline that when in fact, there's really important cues that they should be paying right. attention to, right? So there's that category. And where people are even manipulating your emotions, people who are really good at that are manipulating you to get you to feel guilty, to get you to feel beholden to them. And then there's this other category that's healthier relationships, where it's just like, I don't want to feel mad at this person I love, but I do feel mad at them. Or I don't want to feel frustrated or sad or left out by this person with whom I'm in a healthy relationship. And so they're two very different ways of approaching those types of emotions. One with folks we have a primarily healthy relationship, but one where there's real cues that this is toxic. I'm being manipulated. I'm being lied to. I'm being gaslit to whatever the things are. And you're going to deal with those feelings in a very different way. They're two very different categories.
Yeah. You have a quote in the book. It says, it's normal to feel angry with or hurt by someone you love. A loving spouse still misunderstands you sometimes, and your children's behavior in some ways disappoints you. And yet, all of these relationships can hurt us. And then all of a sudden, we find ourselves where we can lie, deceive, manipulate, guilt message, criticize. We can bully and blame shift. We can lose our tempers and lash out at others. We can act self-centered or arrogant. We are human, and we make mistakes, and we succumb to the worst of ourselves at times. And so these really are, I think, where emotions get such a bad rap, right? Because this is the unhealth that we see and we go, well, then I'm not going to feel this way because I don't want to act that way. And yet, wouldn't you agree that a lot of that comes from not dealing with emotions more than it does from feeling our emotions?
100%. Exactly. And that's the difference. And that's why I wanted to paint that picture of we feel jealous. We feel, you know, we feel all of these things. And the reality is when you begin to understand and name, and I talk about framing it, you really have to pause and really get underneath the surface of those emotions. That's when you can begin to brave a healthier way through the emotions. But when you sideline or exile or, you know, keep those emotions out of your conscious awareness, when you keep them sort of subconscious, that's when they're going to actually become toxic. And you're going to act out in toxic ways. And so the irony is that when you're in a relationship with someone that can honor and name, you know, I really want to be here. And also I'm kind of angry right now.
Yes.
That's actually a sign of health. That's a sign of health. That's healthy. When you can name those hard emotions, it doesn't mean we're going to act on them. And it doesn't mean we want to validate all of them. We need to run a process with them. But a healthy person can talk about those things.
Well, the result of it is, you know, this is what I see over and over again in people's marriages and people's relationships. And I've seen it in my own self too, early, especially in our earlier in our marriage, where you'll be fighting about something and it'll get really hard. And maybe it's hard even over the course of years. And yet there's the thing beneath the thing. There's something that is causing this hurt that is deeper than just the thing you're fighting about on that Tuesday. And one of my friends actually recently came over and she was sharing about her marriage. And she said, they've just started marriage counseling for a second time. And she said, we just had a breakthrough. She said, I realized that I'm not actually hurt by the fight we're having that day. It's just all this built up hurt from years and years. And that was news to her. And I thought, gosh, we need to be more open about this, that a lot of times we're not dealing with the, what'd you say, all of those things, the lying, the manipulating, the arrogance, the self-centeredness. We're not dealing with that on the day. It's oftentimes from so many years of hurt. So for someone that's going, man, I'm in that marriage right now. I'm in that difficult, toxic relationship right now. What would you say to them as kind of a first step to diagnosing what is really going on? A
couple of things. First of all, it's really important because we're all talking about honoring our feelings, naming them. The truth is, that kind of vulnerability about those hard emotions requires safety. You don't want to be vulnerable about those emotions if a relationship isn't safe, because you're giving that person fodder to twist and use against you. And I really want to just get that out there, because we have to be discerning. Those are pearls that we share with people when we say, man, I don't want to feel, you know, jealous. I don't want to feel, you know, angry. I don't want to feel this disappointment. Those are pearls that we're giving people, and those need to be given to safe people. The problem is when we're in a toxic relationship with somebody, they're going to twist that. And so the way that I define that, because we can all, like you said, like I said in the book, we can all be toxic in a moment. You know, we can all lie. We can all gaslight. We can all deceive. Is a consistent pattern of behaviors over time. It's a consistent pattern of behaviors over time. There's no ability to own it. There's no ability to say, you know what, in that moment last night, you told me that thing and I didn't want to admit, you know, this happens in marriage, right? I didn't want to admit that I didn't get to the grocery store. So I lied and I said that I did, or, you know, to our kids, I didn't want to admit. And so I did this thing. I am so sorry. This is what happened. Yeah, right. I did this. I am taking responsibility for it. We can repair, right? That's healthy. In a toxic relationship, a person is never taking ownership. They're never naming, this is what I did. They're always twisting, always manipulating, always controlling, always twisting the truth. And the hard thing is, when you've been with someone for a while, it's like a fish in toxic water. You almost don't know what truth and honesty feels like. Yeah. And so it's really hard.
Well, it is. And I think, you know, now the next question that requires an answer after that is, what if you just realized, like you're listening and you just realized, wow, this is a toxic relationship. What do I do? This person never takes ownership. And I mean, I hate to use words like never. I think that's a counseling 101 practice. Like, we never say never and always. But if you really are seeing a pattern, let's use that language. If you do see a pattern in someone that you're in relationship with, what do you do?
Yeah. So this is where the part of the book that I think is most important, that is the part we like the least, is what I call framing. And these are these places in between. It's a place in between. Historically in the church, we always understood these. They were called liminal places, threshold places, where you give yourself a season to honor something you want to, something you've named, to process it. When the Israelites go into the wilderness, they've left slavery. They've left a toxic system. And they spend this time in the wilderness before they're ready to go into the promised land. There's deep, important work being done there. Now, that's 40 years. Sometimes these places in between are shorter. But to answer your question, you're naming something hard.
I hope they're shorter than 40 years.
Right? But that's one of the things I want to walk people through, is identifying where are your places in between, where you've named something hard. I think this is toxic. And you don't want to jump into the next step. You want to stop. And it's hard to stop. These places in between are disorienting. They're confusing. we're having to kind of, it's like a puzzle. You're having to try to replay the tape of the relationship in light of this new information. Oh, this is toxic. It takes a minute. You need to get your safe people around you. You need to pause. And this is this work of framing, of giving yourself a minute. So that's not the answer people want to hear usually. Yeah. They want the three steps. But really, the best thing I can do is say, pause and really give yourself a minute to understand what that means for you. Because if you try to push yourself into action, I just need to get out of it. Here's the thing. If you're in a toxic relationship, that person knows how to manipulate you. They know how to make you feel bad. They know how to make you feel guilty. They know how to keep you ensnared. You're going to need some tools. You're going to need to equip yourself. You're probably going to need to see a counselor, at the very least, identify your trusted advisors so that you have a strategy for mm-hmm. setting boundaries with the toxic behavior and getting yourself to safety. So set yourself up that camp, you know, that place where you're going to get really wise about how to get out of it. Now, listen, if it's really toxic, if you're in an abusive situation,
yes.
if you're being harmed, you know, call the, we'll give you the there's these 24/7 numbers where you just call and you can get yourself to safety, get out of it, call the police, do what you have
we'll put
to
it,
do.
We'll put it in the notes. Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's more of like a toxic parent or a toxic situation where you can get a little distance, but you're realizing, oh, this relationship is going to have to completely change. The way this person has been treating me is not just annoying, it's toxic. You're going to have to really kind of figure out how to extract yourself from that, set boundaries with the toxic behavior, and more importantly, expose yourself to healing and to good resources. You're going to need that place in between to do that.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last year and a half, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel focused and ready to take on the day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. Guys, even this morning, I had my AG1 shaker bottle, my handy dandy bottle in the car with me for a carpool, like I've told you, because I notice if I miss even a few days, the biggest difference I notice is in my gut and my digestion. Since I'm about to go out of town, I know I can grab a few of my AG1 travel packs and take it with me, and all my nutritional bases are covered. And that's because AG1 has all of the pre and probiotics, adaptogens, antioxidants, whole food source nutrients. And so I know that if I drink it daily, I'm going to feel that extra boost. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/madeforthis. That's drinkag1.com/madeforthis. Check it out.
I think so many people too these days, I don't want to suggest that anyone out there right now is feeling this, but I think some people might judge or imagine that this is language people use as a scapegoat. Like, oh, I'm in a toxic relationship. Oh, I'm going to set boundaries with my parents because they're toxic. And there's almost like a haphazardness to it. So maybe speak to that too, because I genuinely know people that everybody's toxic and they're setting boundaries everywhere. And it feels like, well, you might be the problem. You know, if everybody's toxic, you might. So talk about how to even self-diagnose. Is this something that needs that kind of level of it, urgency and care?
Yeah, to me, exactly what you're saying is evidence of this fact that we're skipping over that second step of framing. We're jumping from toxic to really rigid boundaries. Even if you do that, you may end up in another toxic relationship in 2 years because you haven't actually figured out the whole dynamic of what they were doing, how that wounded you, how subtle things you did without realizing it kind of almost set you up to be exploited. It doesn't mean it's your fault, but it's sort of one of those things where you want to look at that and go, what cues did I miss? Or what can I learn from this? Because I don't want to find myself in this situation again. So again, that step of framing, of really getting to the root of it is so important so that you take a wiser path. Sometimes I think of it like a crossroads. You know, you're sort of driving down a busy intersection and suddenly you stop and realize, oh my gosh, this is toxic. This isn't good. I can't do this anymore. And a part of us wants to just blaze through to the next thing. Great. I'll just keep going. Instead of stopping and going, what is that? How has that affected me? How has that hurt me? How has that impacted? You know, when you ingest a toxic substance, you need a minute to understand how to kind of root that out of your system so that you can move forward toward healthier relationships. It affects us. And so that's why I can't sort of overemphasize to your point. It's not as simple as the culture makes it seem. We can also conflate what we talked about at the beginning, just negative behaviors, bad habits, poor coping tactics from an otherwise healthy person with saying someone's a toxic person. So that framing to really understand, well, I don't like this. I don't like what's happening here. I need to figure out, is this a behavior I can sort of quarantine and enjoy that person's good qualities? You know, I can sort of get myself out of their triangulation or their blame shifting, and I don't have to entertain those conversations, but I can spend time in a group with this person. There's nuance to how we're going to move through these. And so we need to give ourselves that gift of really trying to understand the full picture of the situation.
Give everybody a picture of what it would look like to notice, okay, this relationship hasn't been healthy for a while. I don't feel good when I'm around this person. What can I do to make this better? Of maybe how that conversation could go well. What would it look like to repair and to restore with someone? Let's say, let's do this with a parent, you know, adult child relationship, where the adult child feels and notices, wow, my parents have over years made me feel guilty about blank, blank, and blank. And every time I'm around them, I feel badly. What would you advise someone to do as a first step to not write off their parents, but to actually go, I want to assume the best and I want to lean in, but I want to be honest and I want to heal and I want to bring this conversation to the light?
Yeah, I differentiate between word boundaries and action boundaries. And depending on the, if that toxic behavior, the guilt tripping, that's a great example. Just someone, there's a lot of guilt tripping, maybe triangulation. That's a big one with parents where, or even in families where people put you in the middle of their drama. They don't work out their problem with the other person. They're always pulling you into it. It's very manipulative and disorienting to the person in the middle because you kind of carry the weight of all the drama without having a clear path to resolve it. So those are examples. I kind of go through a list. It's like a WebMD of toxic behaviors, right? That we can get stuck in. If you can really isolate the behavior and the person's been doing it for a long time, word boundaries you can use, but really it's your actions that are going to speak. We so often want to talk, show the other person, listen, this is what you're doing. Please stop doing it. Well, yes, with a really healthy person, they might be able to go, oh my gosh, I'll stop. But in these cases we're talking about, it's probably pretty deeply ingrained. And so what you need to do is name it. And this is where boundaries come in. The boundary is always something that you don't need the other person to do anything in order to achieve it. So it's like, listen, when you put me in the middle, when you talk to me about dad, or when you talk to me about my sibling, that's triangulation. I don't like it. I can't do anything. So I'm going to excuse myself from the conversation. I'm out. And then you don't say it again. You just do it. The next time it happens, you get out, you leave, you excuse yourself, you get off the phone. Your actions are going to speak louder.
So what somebody's thinking right now is, I could never say that. I would never say that. I can't say it. What would you say to them? Because they need to say it. You got to be brave, people. Like, it really is. It can change relationships. I have been here and I have made these decisions and it changes relationships. Now, sometimes you're right. People are not changeable. But in many cases, most cases, I would say, people pick up on it. Like, oh, I didn't even realize I was doing it, you know?
And you're not doing the other person any favors by enabling their behavior. You're giving them a fighting chance to change too. It's not your responsibility to change them. That's why you're going to change your actions. But you're giving them an opportunity to engage the truth of what's happening, and God works through truth. And so, but listen, if it's really hard for you, so this gets at those conflicting emotions. I feel like I should do that, but I can't. Mm-hmm. Honor that. It's okay. Maybe start. So here's a couple of lower hanging fruit. Maybe start with just your actions, just excusing yourself, not telling them why. Show yourself, build trust with yourself. I can do it. I can just leave the room. I can just not go down that road. Use the buddy system, you know, instead of being alone with that person, you know, bring in a friend and use that to buoy you up. So there are sometimes, honestly, I will tell people, if you have to use a text or email, it's okay. It's okay. Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes it's too much to face all the anxiety of the in the moment when we're new to this. It's okay. You know, go easy on yourself. This is hard, but do remind yourself that it's not just doing it for you. You are giving the other person an opportunity to change and heal and grow. You're turning that over to them. You're leaving them in God's hands. And then you go on your way and become healthier. It's really good for yourself and it's really good for the world.
Have you guys heard about Gather 25? On March 1st, 2025, the entire global church is going to gather for 25 hours of prayer, worship, repentance, and commissioning. Jesus followers from Europe, Africa, South America, North America, Australia, Asia gathered together for one global gathering with one goal: to go and make disciples of all people. And so you might be thinking, how is this going to happen? Well, technology is going to make something possible, a gathering of this size possible for the first time in history. Gather groups are going to be hosted all over the world, allowing communities to experience Gather 25 in person with others. So each continent will have a live broadcast site where the live speaking, worship, and video originates from. And for those unable to attend a Gather group or live broadcast site, Gather 25 will be broadcast on TV networks, internet, radio. Our hope is to make this as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. So are you in? Go to gather25.com and say, I'm in. We need every single one of you to be a part of this. For even more updates and good news from the church, you can go on Instagram and follow Gather25. This would not be a global gathering of the church without you. So come on, go to gather25.com, follow Gather25 on Instagram right now.
Y'all, this even applies to kids. Like I think about my kids and I'm like, the more I stay back here and calmly say, like, this is a boundary. And I know it's a different type of boundary, right? It's a behavioral boundary. It's saying, I don't want you to hurt yourself or make this decision. But the more it's about, like, hey, you're going to bump up against this wall versus, man, I'm angry and yelling and, you know, I'm so mad at you. Like, the more you just build boundaries that are, you know, almost like separate from you. They exist. And when people bump up against them, it's like a brick wall. And then you're able to stay calm and go, man, I'm sorry that you chose that, to hit that brick wall. That's hard. I don't know. It's changed the way I parent too, I think.
It gives you that sense of agency, that yes. Feeling of integration of, before God, I've done the work. I it's not that I'm perfect. I own my own stuff. That's why it's so important to own our own stuff, because when we're going to have conviction with other people, we have to be able to go, man, I'm pretty free. Like, if they come back at me with an avalanche of all the things I've done wrong, I'll be like, yeah, I agree with you. I've done those things wrong. It takes us out of being defensive.
Yeah.
And we're able to stand our ground and just have agency and be like, listen, I'm saying this because it's true, not because I'm trying to hurt you. If you don't see that, that's tough. I get it. But, you know, this is my reality. The prerequisite for that is that we've done our own work, right? That we've done that work so that we have that clarity and freedom within our own conscience. And that gift of agency is one of the best feelings. I don't know how to describe it to people if you haven't experienced it, right? That feeling of, I've opened up the windows of my soul to myself, to God, to a few people who love me. So I can't really be harmed in this anymore. So here's what's true. I can't be with you anymore if you're going to be toxic in this way. If you're going to blame everybody else for your problems, you can keep doing that, but I'm not going to be around you anymore. I love you too much to let you stay in that place. I love you too much to tolerate when you, you know, XYZ, when you go out and lie to people or gossip about people. I can't be around that, whether it's your kids, friends, parents, whatever. I love you too much. And that sounds sort of cliche, but when you've done the work and can actually stand in that freedom, it's powerful. And like you said, it's often quiet. You know, I think about the voice of God. When we see God, it's almost like that gentle whisper. I think of the proverb, Jenny, that says a gentle word breaks bone, right? Oftentimes it doesn't have to be big and loud. And that's what people don't realize. It's just a, you know, this isn't okay with me. I'm not okay with this. I'm going to excuse myself. You know, that's powerful. There's power in that.
So good. What do you hope people walk away with from your book?
Yeah, I hope, here's what I hope between both of our books, Jenny, because there is so much synergy. I know your book is changing so many people's understanding of why emotions are actually gifts. I love that you've written about this. I know it cost you to write about this. I know it's hard. I know it's sometimes in some circles still an unpopular message that we're trying to say, no, you know, look, Jesus had all these emotions, right?
Yeah.
And so I think with my book, almost I look at it as a part two, like read I Shouldn't Feel This Way after they've read yours, because there's a ton of tools. It's hard work. It's complicated.
Yes.
Our emotions are complicated. We have, and I kind of go into these conflicting emotions, you know, well, I kind of feel mad, but I also love this person. So then what do I do? Right.
Do
and so I'm just trying to give them you, I'm trying to give you guys so many tools once you kind of really buy into this work. Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, but then what about this? But what about that? You know, what about when I want to numb? What do I do? What about when, you know, my goal is for people to be equipped, is to have tools.
Yeah.
Is to understand, you know, I do this work out of the joy that I have in creating content and writing, but also just this conviction about bringing together faith and psychology. You know, everything I do, I pour back into the work of creating content because I want people to have these healing resources. And so what I want is for people to have tools. I just want them to have tools. Therapy can be expensive. I get it, you know, and you need a good therapist.
Yeah.
But this is also not only the realm of therapy. And that's really my conviction. This is spiritual practices.
That's right. That's what I believe. Yes. And this is human. Somebody, you know, when people ask me, who is this book for? Is it for the extra emotional person or the person that doesn't have emotion? I'm like, it's for everyone, because if you don't view this subject of your life well, and you don't have a healthy theology of emotion, then you're going to keep hurting people. And you may not even realize you're hurting people. You know, one thing I say to people is when you, you know, if you're not sure you need this work or you need this book, ask the people you live with, am I an emotionally healthy person? See what they say. If they're honest and if they feel safe to tell you the truth, and if the answer is, well, or kind of, you know, you probably need to do a little work here. So you be 201, you be class 201, I'll be class 101.
You cannot get enough resources on this. It's hard. Life throws at us challenges and complicated situations all the time, whether it's inside of you or the people you love, it's just coming at us. And this is, we have so many wonderful resources. I think there's a lot of good resources in our faith communities, but this is an area that is still new to bring this work of emotional intelligence, emotional maturity, emotional complexity into our spiritual practices.
Life. Yes.
And it's so important, as you're saying. And so, I love that we're both doing this, that we're both bringing these resources to people. It's going to change things. We're all so sick of the headlines and the betrayals and the toxicity. We want to be different. I really believe the people of God, we want to be different. So let's do it. Let's do it together. You know, we've got the tools now.
So good. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for all your work, and you are a great friend to us. And we're just so glad to have you on. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Thanks for having me. I love being here.
Guys, I have a special request to make. Okay. You know, on your podcast app where you can leave ratings and reviews on the podcast that you listen to? Well, it is honestly like one of Jenny and I's favorite things. It's one of those ways that we get to know you just a little bit by your reviews and your ratings, and it helps other people find out about the show. So would you go today, and if you've been listening for a while and you're enjoying the show, can you go leave a rating and review? We would so appreciate it, and we're always grateful that you're here. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Made for This podcast.